Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of the Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
Welcome to a special episode of the Projection Booth Podcast. I'm your host, Mike White, and joining me, of course, as always, is Mr. Rob St. Mary.
Guten Tag, mein Herr. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Not bad. Of course, phoning in from the Alpine Village up here in the 2 miles up in the great state of Colorado, which is currently large sections of it are underwater due to the flooding, but they're working that out east of here. I've had a few people on the Facebook page for us, our Facebook group for the Projection Booth, ask exactly how I'm doing with all of this heavy rain that fell earlier in the month in September. And just to let you know, no, I'm not drowned out. That's all towards the Boulder area, which is about 3 hours away. And I'm also about a mile higher than them. But there's a lot of folks over there who are dealing with some serious issues. And all the best to them. And hope things dry out for them real soon.
You would think that Mork would be able to help them out.
Well, you know, Nanu. He does what he can. So up here in Aspen, and the one thing that's really interesting as we're talking about on this episode is we're talking about film festivals that we're going to or we're working at or we've been brought in as special guests. And I will be volunteering at the 35th annual Aspen Film Festival, which is the 25th to the 29th of September. And you, good sir, are going to be where?
I'm going to be at the Blue Water Film Festival up in Port Huron, Michigan, and that takes place the 27th and 28th of September, so just coming right up.
See, so we're both busy that weekend, so don't bother to call us. We'll be working on other things. So, you know, Aspen has sort of a proud history of film in that there's a lot of folks who are involved in the film industry who live here. They vacation here. I think I talked about this before on the show. We did a episode, what was it, almost 2 years ago, I think, on Head. That was before I was on the show. And Bob Rafelson lives in Aspen, and it was a great honor a few months ago to go to the Wheeler Opera House and have him present Mountains of the Moon and then do a Q&A afterwards. So he's like a local guy here. Of course, Bob Rafelson, one of the co-creators of The Monkees and helped to create such films through his production company as Last Picture Show and Easy Rider and The King of Marvin Gardens and all of that. So, you know, very important guy in the development of quote-unquote New Hollywood in the late 60s, early 70s. So the Aspen Film Fest is the same age as I am, 35 years old this year. So started in 1978, and this year they're doing 6 days of film. They're going to start with a special preview on Tuesday night, and this is going to be kind of cool. They're going to show Mandela, The Long Walk to Freedom, in which Idris Elba, of course, from The Wire and Pacific Rim, he plays Nelson Mandela. And this film is coming out at the end of the year, and it's getting some Oscar buzz, but we're going to get a chance to see it here on September 24th before it goes wide to everyone else. And they have basically, I think it's 21 movies that they're showing over the 6 days, the main 5 days of the festival being Wednesday the 25th through Sunday the 29th, and basically four films each day, starting at around noon and running till 8 in the evening. And there's some really good stuff. I mean, a nice mix of new stuff that you haven't seen from people, True Stories, which is their documentary section, Global Visions, which is their world film, and also some special presentations. Some of the key ones that I'm really excited about, and I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to see all of these, but there's a documentary called Linsanity, which I don't know. You're not a sports guy. Do you remember the whole Jeremy Lin phenomenon?
Of course. I remember mostly the puns that went around it.
So Lin Sanity is a documentary about Jeremy Lin and sort of his rise to attention a year or two ago. On Friday the 27th, the one that I think I'm going to take a break in the middle of the day. I'm going to go usher this and go see it. At noon, they're showing Gore Vidal, The United States of Amnesia. So if you want to hear actually an interview with the director of that, Nick Rathel, he is on the Myra Breckenridge episode. I got a hold of him and talked to him about the film and about Gore Vidal. He basically spent about 5 or 6 years following him around before he passed away. So this is a really nice documentary biopic, not really biopic, but sort of an encapsulation of his life, looking at his development as a kid and then, you know, writing and then working in film and all of stuff like that. He says that the director says he wanted to focus mostly on the political stuff related to Gore Vidal, not so much into his fiction and things like that, but more sort of the things that he was bringing up in terms of politics, his essays, his nonfiction books and things like that. Sort of an interesting little side note. Most people, unless you know Gore Vidal pretty well, don't know is that he actually is related to the former vice president Al Gore. So it's not a joke. They actually are related. They're cousins. And then other ones on here that I'm looking forward to possibly seeing are Alexander Payne's new film, Nebraska, starring Bruce Dern. This is a black and white film that I've only seen a few stills from it. It says, receiving a sweepstakes letter in the mail, a cantankerous man thinks that he's struck it rich and wrangles his son into driving him to Omaha to claim his fortune. So sounds pretty good. I like Alexander Payne. I think he does a nice job. And as you'll hear in the interview that I did with the artistic director of the Aspen Film Festival, Laura Thielen, she says that this is really a departure from the Alexander Payne of The Descendants and the other stuff that he's done. This is really sort of a smaller film and a much more, I guess, maybe not as big sort of multiplex film that we've seen from him in the past. And then on Sunday, there's actually two films that I'm really excited about seeing. One is actually an adaptation of a play, which is August Osage County, which I believe may have won. Let me look in the back here at the actual thing. Playwright Tracy Letts tells the story of a deeply disturbing and in a wicked way heartfelt American family. It says, Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winning play about life, death, and family strife. One of the year's must see films. Julia Roberts, Julianne Nicholson, and Juliette Lewis play strong-willed women who have diverged into a family crisis that bring them back to a Midwest house where they grew up and their dysfunctional mother who raised them. And I hear that was pretty good. I remember when it was a play, it got a lot of attention. And then right after that, the closing night film, this is going to be kind of interesting. I really like Bill Condon. Bill Condon's a good director. I've enjoyed his stuff. Really liked Gods and Monsters, the film, the biopic he did on James Whale with Ian McKellen back in, I think it may have been the late 90s, early 2000s. Of course, Bill Condon went on to do Dreamgirls, which is probably the biggest, you know, film that he's done. But they're showing The Fifth Estate, which is a biopic that, once again, Benedict Cumberbatch as Julian Assange talking about WikiLeaks. So that'll be kind of interesting to see this sort of little slice of current history dealing with WikiLeaks. So that's the closing night film, The Fifth Estate. So 21 films over basically 6 days and a broad range of stuff. And as you'll hear in the interview with Laura Thielen, the artistic director of the Aspen Film Festival, each year they're always trying to, you know, go a little further, try and bring in different things. And it's kind of interesting also in the conversation that I have with her where we sort of talk about how film festivals have maybe changed a little bit because of our current sort of we can get everything instantly way of dealing with film, which we talked about obviously in great length on the VHS episodes that we did, and how back in the day you either had to see it in the theater or you had to wait a year. And now it's like, well, maybe I don't want to see it in the theater and I'll just, you know, pull a torrent or something, or I'll wait for it to show up in my Netflix queue. So it's kind of interesting, the space now that film festivals kind of occupy, and sort of the idea of what film festivals will be going forward. This is my interview that I did recently with Laura Thielen. She's the artistic director of the Aspen Film Festival.
I'm Laura Thielen. I'm the artistic director of Aspen Film.
Now, when we talk about an artistic director of film festival, what exactly does that entail?
Among other things, it's primarily is setting the artistic mission and vision of the organization. And so obviously that involves watching a lot of films and then picking up a program that really represents what's out there right now, what's on the current landscape, and also to find films that would be of interest for our constituency.
And how long have you been with Aspen Film?
Too long, no. I've been with the organization for 18 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously you've seen the landscape change a little bit. What have you seen in the last few years in terms of that sort of meeting that artistic mission?
I think actually one of a festival's mandates is to bring previews of films that people want to see, because that gives a kind of visibility and a kind of buzz to the festival. But equally important is to introduce audiences to films and ideas and filmmakers that they wouldn't necessarily have access to. And so even with our very tiny 20-plus film program, we really have tried to shape a journey for whether you drop in for one or two films or you see the entire lineup, that we take you to different places and experience different filmmaking styles, different storytelling approaches, and different subject matter.
It has to be a little more difficult to sell people on a filmmaker or something that's sort of more of an unknown quantity. How do you find your job to be able to reach people to go, look, you really need to have your butt in the seat and see this?
Actually, that's probably the biggest change that we've seen, is that now there's all the, you know, the thumbs up, the thumbs down, the Rotten Tomatoes. One of the things that was actually a great luxury, I've been programming film festivals for a long time, is that audiences had an innate curiosity and they couldn't necessarily look up a film and like look at the trailer or look at the reviews. And that, I think, gave festivals this just innate sense of discovery. So I can remember discovering Mike Lee at a film festival, or so many directors, you know, Alexander Payne, who's in our festival this year with Nebraska, being able to go and see those with fresh eyes and then just be able to make up my mind myself of how I felt about it. And I think now, because there's so many different ways that films are delivered, I mean, between VOD and DVD and streaming and Netflix and all of that, there's not that urgency, like this is the only chance I can get to see this film. I mean, unless you're a real hardcore film buff and you want to be the first person to see it. But what festivals offer that I think we can sometimes lose sight of is there's something very special about seeing a movie with other people, just feeling that energy in the theater, whether it's a funny moment, a heart-in-your-throat kind of moment, a sad moment, and just being able to experience. I think we have always been pulled to story. It's part of our, it's almost part of our DNA. And I think sharing story together, and film is just so unique because it's not just story, it's character and it's color or lack of color and music and editing, and they're just it's such a multi-dimensional kind of a storytelling experience. So that's what I think is it's a celebration of community.
So you're saying that because there is so much information now on the internet, it's a little harder to bring people in?
I think people think that they can catch up with things, and probably 90% of the time, they can catch up with things. But I remember when we closed with The King's Speech a couple years ago. That was a euphoric screening. There was that. There was something as people came out of the theater at the Wheeler. It was magical. It was palpable. Everybody felt it. It was just everybody was floating 6 inches above the red carpet because they had had such. It had been such a great experience and a discovery for everybody. And I think that's what. I think watching films at home, there's a lot of distractions, and that's the one thing that's the beauty of the movie theater is you go, you sit down, and hopefully you're there for, you know, the 90 minutes or whatever.
Do you see the building of that community, like you were saying, during this week of film in Aspen? Is it just the films? Is it the way that you get people's attention to bring them to the films? How do you build that sense of community?
I think the way that we build a sense of community is by putting the films together, trying to bring filmmakers in wherever we can, and, you know, with our modest budget, do the outreach that we can to get people plugged into films that we think would be appropriate for them and that they would like. And then really, once the festival starts, it really has so much to do with what the community brings to it. And that's the joy of it, is that, you know, it's like you put on a party and you hope people will come. And then depending who's at the party, it totally determines the tenor of the event. And the one thing that I think is great about our audience is that these are films, especially this year, these are really thoughtful films. And, you know, there's humor in them. There's suspense. There's real thoughtfulness and some challenging moments in some of the films. But I always love to see what the audience does with that and how, you know, we've picked the films and we're committed to them. And now we put them in the hands of the audience. And, you know, people will like some things better than others. But, you know, there's films that I'm really hoping that people discover and enjoy as much as we do.
I know when it comes to building a schedule for a film festival, obviously you have to look at a lot of things, and it's always hard to ask a programmer what are some of their favorite things, because it's almost like asking them to pick their favorite child, and they don't want to do that. But as for yourself, what do you see in this year's schedule that, you know, if you're going to come out and you can only see maybe one or two things, this is where I would...
Well, I guess I'm not going to go to the obvious, like, you know, we have 4 or 5 films that are definitely going to be part of the Oscar season conversation. Mandela and The Fifth Estate and August Osage County and Alexander Payne's Nebraska, which is one of my favorites. It's a very different film for Alexander, and I like it very much. It is kind of 180 degrees from The Descendants. No pretty people, no George Clooney. Shot in black and white, set in the Midwest. But I think it's a really heartfelt, and I like the film very much. I think what, you know, when I'm thinking about your question, I gravitate to the documentaries because these are terrific docs, both Muscle Shoals and This Ain't No Mouse Music, wonderful music documentaries. Code Black does have some intense graphic trauma footage in the beginning of the film, but this is about the future of medicine and the emergency room, and one of the physicians who's in the film is the filmmaker. The Gore Vidal film, Spring in Arnaud, which we show at noon on Wednesday, which is our opening full day, it's a surprise. It is a tender-hearted, little tiny documentary about two artists and their relationship. It's really a surprise and very, as I say, very tenderhearted. But the other thing that I really like is I love our new voices. We have 4 films in the festival that are first and second features. One of them, Short Term 12, there's a likelihood, it's a small film, but there's a likelihood that will have some kind of be part of the conversation for the award season. But films like The Rocket, which is set in Laos, was really a surprise for me. And I think I like surprises when this film is carried by a 10-year-old boy who's a street performer. He's a Laotian street performer. And he carries the movie, and it's the kind of film where it's like when he smiles, it's like your heart totally explodes. When sad things happen. You are just, you're with him. And it kind of is such a different, it was such a surprise for me. I really like that film a lot. There's 21 films. I mean, it's another film that I think, like Father, Like Son, one of the Japanese films that we had, that was really, it's a lovely film. And then of course there's things like Antarctica, A Year on Ice, which is not about penguins, but about the people who work there, year round. It's, if you can imagine, the worker bees of Aspen having a move, but they live in Antarctica and like what it's like for them, but also some gorgeous cinematography. And then, something that I think that will be of particular interest to the local community is, we have the world premiere of a new film called, Thomas Keating, A Rising Tide of Silence, about Father Thomas Keating, who actually has lived in Snowmass at, St. Benedict's Monastery, I think for 20, 30 years, but he's an important, spiritual leader, and this is his story made by his nephew.
It really is sort of a broad range, and it's hard to believe that it's only 21 films.
Well, that is the biggest challenge of putting this festival together, is to really be as broad as we can, both in tone, and in subject matter and in places in the world. I mean, it turns out this year we have three or four films that are set in Asia. Last year we had five French films. So it's kind of funny how, you know, those things work out. I mean, another film that I think is kind of a sleeper is Reaching for the Moon, by Bruno Barreto, who is like, he's one of the preeminent Brazilian filmmakers. This is a primarily English language film about poet laureate Elizabeth Bishop and her relationship with a very famous Brazilian architect, and kind of how they serve as each other's muse. And it takes place in 50s Rio. And it's a very sort of classically told love story, and an unusual love story. And I'm kind of surprised, because Elizabeth Bishop is one of the most important American poets of the 20th century. And I'm surprised at how few people know who she was and what her story was.
Was what I was going to ask is, for you, over the 18 years or so that you've been involved with Aspen Film, how have you sort of tried to make each year just a little bit different? I know festivals, they try to build on what they do from year to year, but what do you think is offered this year that may be a little bit different than maybe what you had the year before?
I would say that I think we've put we've heard from our audience of people who are saying, especially because films come out, and people don't want to see something this week that's going to open next week. I mean, a couple of those is fine, but that's not totally serving our audience. And I think that one of the things we've heard from audiences, we want to see things that we can't see. And that's the whole point of our strands, like New Voices, which is first and second features, or Global Visions, which is the, if you want, for lack of a better word, art cinema films, but they're much broader than that in terms of the selection there. And then also the true stories, the documentaries. And I think that it's also, we do Academy screenings at Christmas, and that is a really fun series to do, because those are the films that are everybody's talking about, and are those the films that are actually going to be nominated for an Oscar? So they have a lot of, many of them have pretty high visibility. I think as serving as a conduit between the filmmaking community and audiences, it's our responsibility to connect filmmakers and audiences in ways that wouldn't necessarily happen. It's challenging for such a tiny festival. Because many festivals show dozens of films multiple times. I mean, it's almost seems silly to like have, say that we have 20 films when, most festivals show 40, 60, 80, or the Toronto Film Festival over 300 films. But that's also dealing with very, very broad and deep audience bases. I think if we can introduce audiences to filmmakers that we think have done something interesting, then I think we're on the right track. And hopefully audiences, that's the other thing too, is I think it's important. There's, especially this year, there are so many films that are coming out of the gate that are like, Actually, the Oscar season frenzy, which has been building over the last 6 or 7 years, I think it's actually not the best. I don't think it creates a particularly healthy environment for film expression to live in, because I think diversity of expression is so important. It's kind of like being saying, I mean, do you want your visual arts that way? Do you want your music that way? I think there's so many different kinds of expression, just like there's so many different kinds of people and the kinds of movies that they like. The one thing that I hope is that people trust us, that it won't be a waste of time. You might like something more than something else, but that there's a worthiness. There's something in there that made it worthwhile for the person who took the chance.
When you consider the audience, I mean, Aspen is kind of a unique town. You know, in the short time that I've been here, I've realized that there's folks who come in who, you know, they're here for a while, they leave. There's folks that are here all the time. There's a broad range of people who are, you know, artists, other filmmakers, things like that. Does that add to your thinking in terms of what you put in the festival? Or do you find that the audiences maybe don't fall along certain lines?
No, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. What is the big challenge is that there are many films that we see that we can't program because it financially, the economics, that's the one thing that has become increasingly difficult. It's not just for Aspen Film. It's really true of festivals across the country, but it's particularly true for an organization like Aspen Film, where we exist because of our community. We're not a press festival. We're not a market festival. We're an audience festival, and so that balance of, in terms of the selection process, because it's become increasingly expensive to present work. You know, there's things that we know that we would love to show, and we know we could get the 20 people in the Valley who would like to see that film and would love to see that film, but we can't do that. That's it really has become just all the different. There's many, many competing factors that make film presentation really a challenge in a small community. And it would be true if you were in Crested Butte or Breckenridge or Vail, or, you know, even Telluride, which just had a fabulous, fabulous 40th anniversary. That's essentially an imported festival. I mean, they're based in the Bay Area. They've got some of their infrastructure, and they've built it certainly over, and they do a fabulous job. But there's a lot of people that come in for that festival. It's a quote unquote destination festival, which that Aspen is to a certain extent a destination festival. We have a lot of people who come in for the festival from all over the country, but it's something that really serves the local community, and it's, you know, it's always interesting to try to keep a finger on the pulse of who that community is.
As a film person, someone who is interested in film, obviously you've seen how presentation has changed. And we're moving away from physical film prints and more towards digital. Does that make it harder or easier for what you do?
This year, it is a real challenge because our primary venues are the Wheeler Opera House here in Aspen and then the Crystal Theater down in Carbondale. And because both are converting to digital cinema projection as we speak, we are not in either of those venues. So the first 3 days of the festival, we start with our sneak preview on September 24th, and then we're at the Isis Theater, and we're there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then on Friday, we move to Pepke Auditorium over at the Institute. And there's a lot of challenges logistically, operations, all those. I think that once DCP shakes down and it's, you know, it's something that people understand and it's easy to operate it. There is a kind of a learning curve with the DCP, especially when you're changing films every 2 hours. But once we get over that learning curve, I think it will be it'll be positive. And presumably it will make it easier for, there is maybe that possibility that you can show films once to a smaller audience, and maybe the economics will work out better that way. But one thing that's, you know, another thing that's happening is there's a lot of, especially for independent work, for foreign language films, because the commercial market has really been constricting steadily, and that festivals are the only place that some of this work gets shown. And so that has become that whole dynamic between a producer or a sales agent and a festival. When they used to give you the film, now they don't give you the film. They charge you for the film. And, you know, I understand. It's like, why should they give us the film?
It's the changing world of independent cinema.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially as we had talked about, I think it was before, where people are like, oh, well, thank you for this list. I'll now put all this in my Netflix queue, or I'll go find it somewhere else.
I think that's great if you want to watch a film a second time. But I really hope that, you know, that people will come and especially see the films that they might not get a chance. You know, if it sounds intriguing, it's like, it's kind of worth taking a gamble. And the one thing that I really like about the films that we have in the fall is that it is kind of a switching gears from the summer, where there's a lot of, you know, there's, it's almost like they're thinking people's films because they're human-centered stories. These aren't about special effects. They're not about explosions. These are about people living in different parts of the world, experiencing different things. We have, you know, lots, and the complexity, that's the thing I really admire about the filmmakers, is trying to capture, whether it's through drama or comedy or documentary, trying to capture the complexity and the spirit of what it's like to be human today. I have great admiration for the filmmakers who are willing to take those on, and especially if you're dealing with, there's a lot of dysfunctional families in the movies this season. I mean, not just at Aspen Film, but sort of across the board. And it just is, it's interesting where people can find the heart, but they also find the humor in it.
So for those who are interested in coming out, finding out more, what's the best way for them to get information?
Our program is at aspenfilm.org. And tickets are available through aspenshowtickets.com and at the Wheeler box office.
Anything you want to add that maybe I forgot to ask you about, people should keep in mind?
Love to see you at the movies.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This has been lovely.
That was Laura Thielen of the Aspen Film Festival. She's the artistic director. And if you have any interest in showing up for the Aspen Film Festival, if you happen to be in Aspen or you're coming through the area, the best way to get information is to go to aspenfilm.org. You can follow them on Facebook and Twitter. And the main venues will be the ISIS Theater in downtown Aspen and also Pepke Auditorium, which is part of the Aspen Institute. So you can get all that information. Of course, we'll have all the information on our website at projection-booth.com.
So while you are enjoying the fun in Aspen, I will be up in Port Huron, Michigan, which is really kind of it is an absolutely beautiful place up there. I really have enjoyed, I think I've been going up there now for, this will be my third year, I guess. The first year I was up there kind of doing interviews for the festival, interviewing the filmmakers and some of the mucky mucks that were up there. And for the last I'm losing track here because they've been around for 5 years now, and I've gone up either three or four. And I'm trying to remember how many, but I can't remember how many times I've been a judge for them. But this will be at least the second time that I've been a judge for these guys, and a wide range of films, again mostly shorts. Sometimes they have features. This year there are no features going on. This year it's going to be about a full day's worth of program on Saturday, and the previous night they're going to do comedy, which they've done for the last couple of years. They're doing J. Chris Newberg is coming in, and he's doing an evening of stand-up. And from what I hear, and you'll hear this a little bit in the interview that we did with Jeremy Steeman, the director of the Blue Water Film Festival, he is going to be joined on stage, probably not at the exact same time, but will also be on stage that night Mr. Chris Gore is going to be doing some stand-up from his new album, comedy album, Celebrities Poop. So that will be a treat, I am sure.
He's always a treat, Mr. Gore.
He is. So that will be kind of fun. And Chris is also being a judge this year. So I get to hang around with Chris Gore again, which will be a lot of fun.
Which is interesting to me because I do not know Chris Gore to be all that judgmental.
That's true. Yes.
I don't know if he can handle that.
So yeah, it'll be me and Chris and Steve Bannatyne and Catherine J. McDermott, who is over working at the Michigan Film Institute, where our good friend Doug Schultz works and where we were just at ZombieCon a few weeks ago. And so, yeah, it'll be nice to meet her and hang out with Steve and Chris and just kind of have a nice time. They really treat me well up there. It's kind of good. I go up, I get dined and a little bit of wined and going to hopefully hang out with this year's Golden Mitten recipient, who is Miss Ellen Burstyn. So, yeah, again, King of Marvin Gardens reference that you did earlier. There you go.
That's right. You know, and a native Detroiter, in case you didn't know. See, that's the thing I really like about the Blue Water Festival is that it is very Michigan focused.
Yeah, totally Michigan focused. They opened it up a few years ago to films from Ontario as well, since they have the bridge there, trying to bridge that gap between Michigan and Ontario. And you would think with Toronto that they would just be flooded with film entries, but apparently the word hasn't gotten out that wide yet. So hopefully they'll start getting some more stuff from Canada, but the stuff that's from Michigan is pretty great. As a judge, I am pre-watching all the films so that I can actually have all my ballots ready and everything for that Saturday night. I'm turning them in later on this week. And I have to say, what I've seen so far, some of them have really blown my socks off. There's one called 50 Lakes and One Island, which was an hour-long documentary about Isle Royale and up in Lake Superior, which is this – I had heard about it, but I had never really seen any moving images from up there. And oh my God, it is just so gorgeous. It's like every shot in this film, it's just this guy going around and visiting all 50 lakes, and he's kayaking sometimes, other times he's hiking around. It's just him and nature and one camera. And my God, it is just beautiful, beautiful stuff. And I thought right around the 25-minute mark, I was like, okay, this can end now. But then it really did hold my interest through the entire thing. It was just the scenery and everything. That's one where I think I might duck into the theater and see it projected on the big screen just because it looked so good on my computer.
Yeah, I mean, Isle Royale, for those who don't know, is all the way up the UP, and it's like at the tip, like the tip of the UP kind of points to it, and it's a preserve. Like, there's no cars there. I think you maybe take a ferry there, and I think you camp. There's like nowhere to stay in that way. There's no sort of like modern conveniences, so it's very rustic.
Yeah, he's in a tent for almost all of it, and there's a couple times where he's in basically it looks like a wooden shack, and that's it. You know, it's just him and like a little propane tank. And just, it was interesting for me just to see how he was surviving with these little conveniences and stuff. So, yeah, that's just one of the films that I saw. And then, you know, I've seen some zombie comedies. It's kind of weird. Like, the zombie wave has really kind of infiltrated stuff. There was at least one zombie comedy. The closing night film, Abed, is a zombie, I don't want to say romance. This is really kind of disturbing horror kind of sexy, but not really kind of thing. Even though I'm kind of hesitating about talking about it, it was very interesting, and I would recommend it to people. I've seen a lot of good stuff, so I'm looking forward to being able to dole out some prizes and hopefully not get into too many arguments with my fellow judges.
That's good. And also, of course, as we always like to say, spread forth the gospel of the projection booth.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm going to be bringing all kinds of those little magnets and key fobs and stuff that I got made for going up to the going up to the fan expo in Toronto that I just didn't give away at all. So the people of Michigan get to benefit from that.
See, I think you're much more of a film festival kind of guy than you are a convention goer.
I am definitely much more of a festival guy. Yeah, I kind of found that out the hard way, you know? It's like I don't mind being on, like, panel discussions and, you know, shooting my mouth off, that kind of stuff. But I really don't have any use for shopping and walking up and down and seeing tchotchkes and stuff. And because I'm much more of the mind of, like, that's a very interesting Domokun hat. I wonder if I could find one online. Oh, there it is for about half as much as that. Well, I guess I will continue my journey in walking.
You're so mean.
I don't know. But it's just like I don't need stuff, you know? You've seen my basement. You know how much crap I have. I don't need any more things. So I just don't need to buy stuff. So I just need to watch movies is what I need to do.
I don't know why you say such horrible stuff, you know, because when I left Detroit, what was the first thing I did? I gave you a book that if it fell on a small child, it would probably kill or maim them.
Yeah. Which, it still needs to be shelved. Yeah, the Napoleon book is really, that it was quite a doorstop you gave me, sir.
When I found the need to eventually pare down all this stuff so I could go live in my shack in the mountains, that's what happens.
Yeah, Grizzly Adams.
I can't grow the beard, though. I look horrible. And as I was saying to someone today, I'm like, you know, my hair doesn't grow long. It grows wide. I've got I get a white boy fro, and it's horrible. So you will not see me looking like some, you know, mountain man up here. It just ain't going to happen.
That's why you got to wear a toque.
Oh, yeah. That's right, eh? See, but that's the thing is my Canadian references here don't go over too well because it's not a border state.
Right, yeah.
No, it's not well.
They probably don't know their Bryan Adams songs very well there.
Don't you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't know what it is to have Canadian content shoved down your throat.
Not that I'm complaining.
No.
No.
You know, not at all.
I enjoyed the 7 hours of curling every Saturday afternoon.
I was all about James at 15 and then subsequently James at 16.
You know, I still have a strange thing for girls who say a boot.
Yeah, let's take another break and play back an interview with Jeremy Steeman, the director of Blue Water Film Festival.
Well, I'm Jeremy Steeman, executive director of the Blue Water Film Festival.
So how many years has the Blue Water Film Festival been going on?
We're entering into the fifth year this year in September. At the end of September, the 27th and 28th, we'll be taking the stage with our fifth year.
Now, are you the founder of the festival?
Me and two other people, along with Kelly Kennedy, drew it up on a bar napkin one night and came up with the way that we were going to set it up and put it together. And those folks have basically went on their own way because of time restrictions. So Kelly and Kennedy and myself spend a lot of time putting this on. We do have a board now, and we are a nonprofit 501c3, and we have an executive board as well as a advisory committee that kind of give us some ideas to which ways we should go.
What was your inspiration when you started the fest?
Well, Kelly Kennedy was a person that I had known for a little while, and she was telling me about how she always wanted to do a film based on the individuals that cleaned rooms at hotels because she did it for one summer while she was still in school. And she always thought it would be a really cool documentary to do about their life, you know, seeing, because we always pass them in the hallways whenever we stay at a hotel, but we never really think about them as individuals and what they're going through. And it's very interesting to hear her talk about it because I guess I'd never known this, but usually they tip. People who stay there tip and their change on the counter, and a lot of the people who do the housekeeping there don't expect it, but they survive on a lot of that. And since then, I've always felt that I should always leave something on the counters whenever I leave. But anyway, she always thought it was a very cool subject for a documentary. And she said, but I don't know the first thing about getting it into any of the film festivals or what would I do with it after that. And I said, well, you know, make it. We'll provide an opportunity for you to show it. And we kind of discussed it. And And the documentary never got made, but we have a film festival now. So that's basically how it started.
How has it changed since it started? What was it like the first year?
Well, first year we were just putting our toes in the water because we didn't really know what we were doing, and we wanted to make it so it was Michigan-based. Because of the film incentives, we always felt that the locals would have something to be able to show and show what kind of great things were coming out of Michigan. 5 years ago is a very different place in Michigan's history because at that point, a lot of people were very down on themselves. A lot of people were leaving the state. A lot of uncertainty was going on. At that point, we were trying to do something that was invigorating to our own area as well as Michigan on a whole. Since then, we've expanded a little bit, but that first year, we really just wanted to see exactly what we could come up with. We had visions of grandeur our first year, thinking, well, we'll do this and we'll have so many films come in that it'll pay for everything and we won't need to worry about any sort of a compensation at all and everything will be great. Well, we only got about 40 films in our first year, and it was really eye-opening, though, because the judges that we got were all local, and since then we've learned that what we have in our possession is very valuable. It's kind of a commodity, you know, and not everyone has one in the area, and we've been able to put it on a larger scale than most film festivals in the area, and we're very thankful for that and very pleased by that.
So how has it changed over the years?
Thankfully, on a whimsical afternoon, I thought, well, I'm just going to write Chris Gore and see what he's doing nowadays. Because, you know, he wrote the Ultimate Film Festival Survival Guide, and he was also in this movie called Official Rejection. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just write him and see what's going on. And then we started growing a bond back and forth, just chatting, because he's actually a Royal Oak, Michigan. He grew up in Royal Oak. So we started chatting about stuff, and I never really realized that he was the founder of Film Threat magazine, and only later did I learn this and thought, oh, wow, that's really cool. But our second year, we invited him in, and then he ended up coming in, and since then, we've been able to really, really take leaps and bounds. He's really guided us in some ways and kind of left us to find our own way on many others, and I'm very thankful to Chris and everything that he's been able to give to us.
Are all the movies exclusively from Michigan?
Well, now we've actually entered into the Ontario market. So it's because we're the Blue Water Film Festival, we always wanted to make it into Michigan versus Ontario, not necessarily a head-to-head competition, but just let's see what the area has to offer us. And so we delved into the Ontario, really delved into the Ontario market this past year, and was hoping for a lot of films from the Toronto market. And we did receive several, and we're very pleased with that.
So what have been some of the highlights from previous festivals?
Well, Dave Coulier was our first moment of taking us to that next level. One of our advisors mentioned one time, you know, you build the event, and people will come to your film festival. Because we have an event up here called the Blue Water Fest. It's the Port Huron to Mackinac race. And if you're just talking about a bunch of boats running out and going up to Mackinac, it's not much of a, you know, it's a race. And people can go and watch the first couple seconds of it as it takes off, and then nothing, they could all go home. So the thought is that you build this event around the Port Huron to Mackinac race, then you get all sorts of people to come in and participate in the race or the events that are happening up until that point, and it kind of feeds on itself. And now the Port Huron to Mackinac race is attended by thousands upon tens of thousands of people. So in that same line of thinking, we ended up inviting Dave Coulier to come in and kick us off with a night of comedy. And then that same year, we had Sid Haig come in and with the premiere of Nemesis. And we were really pleased with that. Doug Schultz's Nemesis premiered, the North American premiere happened in Port Huron. And then the following day was the film festival. And it was a nice ramp up to let people know what is actually happening in this film festival. And we've been pretty honored with some of the things that have happened here, including last year we had The Informant premiere here on Thursday night, and it's now just being released on national level. And we had it almost a year before it ever was released. So it's very cool to be able to have made these connections over the last several years, and I'm really pleased with the way that we've moved forward.
Now, was that the first year that you gave away the Golden Mitten?
Yes, that is. And the Golden Mitten that year was given to Timothy Busfield, who grew up in the Lansing area. And the Golden Mitten represents an individual that has contributed to the arts and entertainment field. And the second year we gave it was to, Gilda Radner. And Gilda Radner, the Gildas Club members came up and accepted the award on her behalf. And we gave them a nice little plaque to be able to put in their offices. The theory behind that previous year was we wanted to make sure that Gilda's Club was not forgotten. And during the 80s and 90s, it was a very prominent nonprofit organization, and they do such a great job. And we thought, what a great opportunity for us to make sure that Gilda's memory goes on. And it was a great event that year.
What do you see the festival kind of bringing to Michigan or kind of highlighting from the state?
What we've always tried to do is, because of the market and the way it was about 5 years ago, we wanted to buy all of our judges a gift basket with only Michigan-made products in it. We want to give all of our VIPs Michigan-made products, all of our filmmakers Michigan-made products. And the logic behind that is, once we get a lot of these folks into the Blue Water region, they can see all the beauty that surrounds us, the beautiful waters, the gorgeous lighthouses, the wonderful bridges, and we want to invite them to come back. At the point of 5 years ago, we were the highest unemployment rate in the state, and we were like second or third county in the United States of highest unemployment rate. And so what we were trying to do is to generate business within our own community. And the thought process was, back then, when the film incentives were so high, we were trying to get folks to come in and be able to shoot here, especially when they were spending thousands and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars on the film incentives. We would love to have folks be able to come in here and shoot using our beautiful area. And that was the original theme, was because of Michigan. We were trying to make, not necessarily generate business, but enhance our possibilities of having a movie shot here.
So do you think you've made any headway with that kind of stuff?
Well, we've had 10 movies shot here, one TV show shot here, a couple of documentaries. The way that I view it, and I certainly hope that I don't sound crass or self-important, but the narcissistic person in me wants to say, although, you know, I understand that there's a lot of factors in here, but the community is turning around, and we were one of the first that said, you know, this town deserves something, when everyone said, well, this town isn't everything it's cracked up to be. And we've always forged ahead saying, these are the cool things that can happen here. And we were one of the first groups to ever put a stake in the ground and say, this is what's happening and this is what we're going to do, and force people into coming out of their houses and doing things. And since then, you know, the most film festivals that were ever in Michigan at that time was that first year that we were doing it. And there was like 47, if I remember correctly. It's down, it's pared way down again. And I think there's only like 25 or 26 that are still in operation right now. But at that time, to have 47 film festivals in one state, it just seemed like every time you turn around, there was another film festival popping up. And we don't want to necessarily say that we're better or worse than anybody else. It's just that we've been very blessed in order to be able to still be going into our fifth year and having some really cool things happening for us this year.
Do you think that the cutting of the film incentives has anything to do with the kind of decline in the number of film festivals?
Yes, directly. I understand why some people feel certain ways, but when it's directly associated to film festivals or to film, when you put all these people who are working on all these movies being shot here, getting paid for them, and then having a couple weeks off, and then turning around starting a new movie and getting paid for it, and then all these people who are working second, third camera, or working as makeup artists, or working as talent, now all of a sudden, those people on their 2-3 weeks off, they have cash and time to be able to make their own movies. And all those individuals had a lot of money coming in to them, you know, not a lot. A lot makes it sound like they're millionaires. But they had a disposable income where they could actually say, hey, all these people who worked on Transformers 3, come over to my house and let's shoot a movie. And I want to do it based on this. I just want to, you know, try this tech. And then they would have this other movie that used all these individuals that were the camera operators from Transformers. So now you have 30, 50, 100, 150, 200, 300 films floating around Michigan saying, hey, you know, let's go ahead and throw it out here and see what we can come up with in the film festival because I want to see if this technique really works. Well, now that they've put it out there, now some of them have moved on to bigger and better things. And, you know, it unfortunately, when those incentives were pulled back, these individuals aren't either in Michigan anymore, have to go somewhere else and maybe come back once every couple of months and live with mom and dad for a couple of weeks or whatever. But they're not making the same amount of movies that they were 5, 4, 3 years ago.
So apart from that, what other kind of challenges have you faced over the years?
Funding is always a big one. You know, everyone thinks that for some reason, I don't know why, but a lot of filmmakers think that right off the bat, well, if I'm just sending in my $50, that means that it must be going to somebody. Well, it kind of does, but it kind of doesn't, because we actually give away a cash prize at the end, and I know a lot of film festivals do, but what we've always tried to do is make ours a little bit interesting in the fact of a competition. And our competition is always based off of yourself as a filmmaker. If your sound is bad, you get a lower score, which means that when you rank up against somebody else who had better sound and better lights and better whatever, then that means that you're battling against yourself. And so that's where our competition lies. So if you have this great, wonderful movie with poor lighting, and this other movie has basically above average and has 7, 8, 9 scores, but you're a 10, 10, 10, 9, 8, 0 or a 1, and then all of a sudden a 10 again, you'd be in competition with that second film because it lowers your averages down. So it's a real interesting way to do a film festival because a lot of people get upset when their films aren't accepted, and it's not a personal thing. In fact, after we watch your official rejection, we've always, and I strongly suggest if you're getting into the film festival market to watch official rejection, me as a film festival director or you as a filmmaker really need to be able to understand what goes on into the building of the film festival. Yes, there are nightmare situations, but there are nightmare situations whether they're at Sundance or anywhere. Cans can have a burnt-out bulb. You know, things can happen. So there's all sorts of different kinds of things to take into account. But the beauty of official rejection is that they kind of go into the whole thing of, well, I only watched 10 minutes of this movie, and then I say, nah, it's not going to work, it's gone. Or I only watched 2 minutes, and I don't know right away if it's worth putting in. Or I know Bobby Sue, so therefore I'm going to get my film into this certain movie or this certain film festival. we have lost many friends, many friends that were filmmakers, because they assume that, well, I'm making these films and they're great and you should accept them. But if they don't stand up to the test, unfortunately, we can't let them in. So therefore, you know, it's being told that your product isn't as good as what you thought that it was. Now, granted, our selection committee changes every year. And what we always try to do is to bring in people who work in the industry, whether you're been a camera person or a sound person, or you've worked in television, or you've worked on movies, or you work on a radio station or whatever. You're a member of, or you work in the industry. You come in, you watch movies, and you rank them. And if you have some issues, well, you may not make it in. So it's not a personal vendetta against anybody. It's just numbers. And the numbers always pan out, and sometimes they're not always in people's favors, unfortunately. So anyways, back to the official rejection. We take a look at that and say, okay, that's our barometer. We want to make sure that everyone has an equal playing field, where I can go in here and I can be a 16-year-old student from Grand Rapids and possibly get in if all my movie is good. There's a lot of people who spend lots of money and unfortunately did not make it into the film festival. But there's been kids that have absolutely no budget who get in and they're just blown away by the fact that they've actually made it into a film festival. And that's one of the proud things that I'm able to look at and go, you know, I look at some of these filmmakers that have made it into our film festival that kind of changed their lives or made something that makes you go, wow, they really have a great future. And they've went on to do some really cool things.
So let's talk about this year's festival. What do you have going on? What's in store?
Kicking off the film festival this year with our comedy is J. Chris Newberg. He's from Royal Oak. And Chris Gore is dipping his toe into comedy now. He just released an album called Celebrities Poop. And he's out and about doing his stand-up comedy, so he'll be coming in doing a set. And we also have Ron Taylor and Heather Kozolowski will be emceeing that. And then on Saturday, we actually have High Octane on Film, and we actually will have cars that were featured in several different movies, including Iron Man 3, Need for Speed, which is being currently shot, as well as Fast and Furious 5. So all those cars will be in. And then we also have, I'm pleased to announce that you're one of our judges. And
what?
You didn't get your packet?
I didn't get the memo.
And then Chris Gore is one of the judges. And we also have Catherine McDermott, who worked on Last of the Mohicans. And she was producer for that. We also have Academy Award nominee Steve Bannatyne will be coming in to be a judge as well. And then also, we will also be featuring Ellen Bernstein coming in, and she'll be our Golden Mitten recipient this year. Yeah, we're pretty excited about that. We work basically all year round to get folks in here, and we're really pleased to have Ellen coming into the area and being part of the film festival this year. You know, Sid Haig and her were in a movie together.
I did know that. Yeah, so now you'll have two people from Pit Stop, and you'll have two people from Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
You need to find out some other, like, weird connection kind of movie going on.
Well, you know, we've been after Tom Hulce for a couple of years, and then this year we kind of gave up on him because I know that he's over in England right now, but, you know, if we can figure out Tom Hulce and his connection to somebody else, you know, but Ellen is, you know, we were just kind of thinking, all right, well, who's from Michigan that we can get in contact with? We started talking, and we said, well, you know, let's go for it. Let's just say right off the bat, let's go after Ellen Burstyn and see what we can come up with. And we were absolutely floored when she said, I'll be there. And we're absolutely happy. And because, you know, sometimes you want to make those connections and have folks come in, and you have, like, the top two or top three that you go after right away. And sometimes you run out, and sometimes you strike hard, and you just never know. And Ellen was our first choice this year, as Timothy Busfield was the year before, or the 2 years ago. Kelly Kennedy said right off the bat that Timothy Busfield is exemplary of this honor, and they both did theater, and they both do TV, and they both do movies, and she is excellent in everything. You know, she's won an Academy Award, she's won a Tony, she's won an Emmy, so she is a living being of the Golden Mitten.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I always find fun to do when you and I get together, is this whole, like, who's from Michigan game, you know, like, did you know this guy was from Michigan? Oh, how about this one?
you know, it's funny that you should say that, because as I grow older, it's funny to know that who was from Michigan before they passed on. And it's almost really kind of strange, because Kelly and I have this conversation all the time. There's this gentleman that's from Port Huron that was at the beginning of Saving Private Ryan. And it's just a small little cameo. You know, he's in there for just a couple moments because he's the gentleman that's at the cemetery at the very beginning and at the very end. And he's from Port Huron. And it's very kind of cool to know that folks from the area move on and do some really cool things. Steve Bannatyne is actually from Port Huron.
I think it was when we were doing the judges panel a couple of years ago that Chris Gord brought up just how many people there are from Michigan in general, and the Midwest in particular, in Hollywood, and just that it's such, like, you can kind of pick other Midwesterners out a little bit, like, and it's interesting to know and to find out just how many people from the area have kind of moved over there. I mean, just, you know, one of these, like, you know, oh, he's, did you know Terry Crews was from Michigan? Did you know T.K. Simmons was from Michigan? And just all of these different celebs, you know, Paul Schrader. And it's just like, you know, that's one of the things that we try to do on the podcast, is to always kind of highlight these Michigan connections and stuff. And really, it's kind of like, sometimes it's like shooting fish in a barrel, when it's just like there are so many people that have these Michigan connections, and it's just kind of this weird thing.
Yeah, it really is. And considering that Chris is part of the Michigan Mafia, but that's what they call themselves out there. And there's a group of guys that kind of just pal around with each other, and they're known as such. And Timothy Busfield and Mike Banger and Robin Williams, and there's just a ton of people that are from Michigan or grew up here, and it's a nice little thing to feel home, yet being in California at the same time. I know that everyone out there probably has heard about the Coney Island restaurant that's out there, that, or Coney Dog place that Mike Binder's partners with, and Tim Allen is there too, and they all kind of just go there and hang out and know that, you know, if they go there, they're going to watch Michigan sports on the televisions and be able to drink Verner's and Faygo and just get the whole nine yards while they're there. And it's a nice little throwback when you can't make it home for months on end. You feel like you're almost at home.
Listening to Insane Clown Posse on the jukebox.
That, Bob Seger, Eminem, and Kid Rock are the only ones that are accessible, and Motown.
So where can folks go to find out more information about the Blue Water Film Festival, and why don't you tell us again when it's happening this year?
Happening in September 27th and 28th, just less than a month away. We are going to be selling tickets on Ticketmaster, as well as our website, and that website is www.bluewaterfilmfestival.com, or you can find us on our Facebook page at Blue Water Film Festival. And that's www.facebook.com/Blue Water Film Festival.
All right, that was Jeremy Steeman, the director of the Blue Water Film Festival. We will have links, of course, over to the Blue Water Film Festival at our website, projection-booth.com. And I'm hoping this time I will take my microphone and my recorder up to the festival and hopefully get some interviews with folks and maybe have something to share later on, especially if Ellen Burson's a little chatty. Maybe I'll talk to her about Requiem for a Dream or King of Marvin Gardens or same time next year, that kind of stuff.
You know, I could see a possibility of a little Aspen, Detroit, Blue Water Film Festival, Aspen Film Festival connection there. You know, maybe I can get Bob Rafelson to talk to us, and then you could get Ellen Burstyn to talk to us, and we could have a King of Marvin Gardens episode. That'd be pretty good.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
That'd be nice if that works out.
But beyond that, I mean, the thing that's great about these film festivals and any film festival that's near you, I mean, if you get an opportunity, just go, you know, just go and have fun and see things that maybe you wouldn't get a chance to see normally or things that maybe you heard good word about through the web or something like that. I mean, it really gives you an opportunity to sort of broaden your horizons. Not only that, I mean, the one thing that I really kind of miss, and I always kind of felt this way about going to the movies, is that to me, going to a theater and seeing a movie with an audience, to me, was sort of the equivalent of like how some people feel about going to church. You know, it was just like this communal activity. You get together, you laugh, you cry, you have that. And, you know, it's always great after, you know, to hang out with someone after and have a drink, get coffee or, you know, a glass of wine, a beer, whatever, and just sort of chat, you know, what'd you think of this? What'd you think of that? Kind of like what we try and do here each and every week on the projection booth.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that came up consistently when I was at the Kansas City Film Festival, there are a lot of filmmakers at that film festival who are asking, you know, what are some of the things that they should do when it comes to getting their films into festivals? And the advice that we gave over and over again was go to film festivals, see what they're like. You know, don't live this kind of cloistered thing. If you're going to think about making movies or, you know, are a movie maker, it's always a good experience to get out to film festivals, even if you've had stuff in festivals before or whatever. Just see how different festivals operate, enjoy how they are, and just kind of expose yourself to that, especially if you're ever thinking about making a movie. You really owe it to yourself to go to a festival and kind of get, you know, a little bit of a taste of reality.
I've been lucky to have my two features in different festivals and been able to go to those festivals. And just, it's amazing because you have such a different experience from festival to festival, depending on where it's located, what they kind of focus on, and also in terms of what your film is. Like, if you find yourself in a genre festival, then that's a totally different crowd. That's more almost like we were talking about conventions, where you'll get people that will show up and they'll be dressed up, or they'll just be like the biggest hardcore geeks about, you know, zombie films, vampires, whatever. Or if you go to something that maybe is documentary festival or something like that, which I've also had my stuff in. So that's a totally different crowd. And it's just great to go and meet all these different people, see what other people are doing. And really, to me, it's just about exposing yourself to different ideas, different people, and seeing how people tell their stories. So that if you're someone who's in media and you want to tell stories, you can understand, okay, I liked how they did this. Maybe I didn't like so much how they did that. And you can really kind of learn. It's really a great learning experience for anyone who wants to be a media maker.
It's also a really good networking opportunity most of the time, because you're going to have the filmmakers, I mean, especially a festival like this with Blue Water, where it's Michigan films, Michigan filmmakers in a Michigan location, chances are most of the filmmakers are going to show up. So if you see a movie that you like and you want to discuss it with the filmmaker, chances are they're going to be right there. And the folks that come to this festival, very approachable.
To me, the greatest learning experience as a filmmaker is actually doing the work. But the second greatest experience is to talk to other people about how they did the work. Because obviously you can't make you know, in 1 year, 20 movies. But you could watch in a festival like Blue Water, you could watch 20 movies and talk to all the filmmakers right there and go, hey, how did you get this? Or, you know, how were you able to pull this off? And really learn about sort of the creative aspect. And not only that, but just sort of the hustle aspect of how people are able to put these things together.
With this group of filmmakers, this kind of community of filmmakers that is in Michigan, it's also a great chance, you know, oh, I really liked the way that this was shot. Well, maybe you can talk to the DP. Maybe that person can work on your next film, whatever it is. So it's, you know, I'm sure that there's a lot of not just story swapping, but also, you know, people swapping as they go along as well.
Exactly. So it's a great opportunity. Once again, the Aspen Film Festival here in Aspen, Colorado will be September 25th to the 29th, and you can learn more about how to get tickets and where everything's going to play. You can go to our website, projection-booth.com. And once again, the Blue Water Festival, Mike.
September 27th and 28th. I believe it all takes place at the McCarran Place right downtown.
And remember to pronounce it correctly. It's Port Huron, not Port Urine.
I didn't know that was a problem.
Well, when I was a kid, I remember like lazy diction of certain people on the east side calling it Port Urine.
Bunch of lazy dictions.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, all this film festival stuff is kind of cool. And one thing that I wanted to hit on is that I guess we could call this Film Festival Plus Ego Fest episode. I don't know. But we're not going to ego fest out too much. Mike and I are both going to be on different podcasts again. Of course, we've been on Outside the Cinema. We've been on the Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts podcasts, I would say, over the past maybe 2 or 3 months. So you can go back and get those and make sure to tune in and check those out. And, of course, always support those guys. Outside the Cinema, Bill and Chris do a great job. And Mike and Iris do a great job over at Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts as well. So I'm going to be on podcast, actually. A friend of mine that I went to broadcast school with has. It's called the Not So Cool Kids Podcast. And this is the explainer that he sent to me. He says, is a nerd culture and pop culture show with industry reviews from popular forms such as TV, film, gaming, comics, books in general, fan films, websites, viral video, art, and, you know, whatever, collectors, fandoms, and hobbyists. Sounds like they like conventions, which obviously you don't, so. But anyway, they have 5 hosts over there. This is incredible. They have 5 hosts over at the Not So Cool Kids podcast. My good friend Brian Titus, who's a creator and producer, co-host. He considers himself the movie nerd. He has a co-host that handles collectibles and toy nerd culture. They have a comic book nerd culture person, a book person, and another film person. So, and they've done pretty well. They've had some folks on there who work with Star Wars in various forms. His name is Robbie Rist, who voiced Michelangelo in the live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. And they're just sort of getting off the ground here in the past year or so. So,
is that Robbie Rist who was Cousin Oliver on the Brady Bunch show?
You are correct.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, see, Not So Cool Kids podcast. So I'm going to be on there, and much like OTC, I believe it to be a live show. It says here broadcast goes live at 7 p.m. Eastern, and I'll be on there on Friday, September 27th. So I'm going to take a small break away from the Aspen Film Festival to make sure that I'm on the Not So Cool Kids podcast. And you can find out more about them on Facebook. Just type in Not So Cool Kids podcast. And they're also on iTunes. And I'm not sure if they have a website, but if they do, we'll make sure to put a link up there at projection-booth.com.
You know, Robbie Rist was just in Sharknado as well.
Wow. I just like the idea of the Sharknado. I have not seen the film. I just think it's so ridiculous that it's sublime.
It really was a misnomer because it was really more of a shark waterspout than a tornado.
That's because waterspouts deal with water and tornadoes deal with land.
But it occurred over water, and then it just kind of branched out from there.
Speaking of weather, when I was in Grand Rapids, I heard a term that I had never heard of before.
Oh, do tell.
It is not a tornado, but it is a derecho.
Oh, really?
Do you know what a derecho is?
Is that a dust devil kind of thing?
No. A derecho is straight line winds, which means if you had the speed of a tornado, but instead of a swirl, you know, it's just really heavy winds.
Is it true that the sand can blow at 700 kilometers per hour?
It can render flesh into dust in minutes.
Yeah. So imagine if they came up with something like shark derecho, which would just be sharks flying at you at like 100 miles an hour. Not in a circle. Just sharks, you know, with a heavy wind.
I keep thinking of Doritos when you say derecho.
Derecho. Yeah, see, this is all Spanish. I don't know why these Spanish words got into the language there. I mean, you would think Latin maybe, but for some reason it's Spanish.
Porque el niño.
Yes, I guess so. I am el niño, which means the niño.
Well, it's funny, you're going to be on a podcast on Friday, and I believe that the episode of Radiodrome that I'm on is dropping Friday as well, and that is going to be a look at all of the Scanners films. And Rob, if you're like me, you didn't realize that there were more than one Scanners film, but there were five, as a matter of fact, and I sat through all five, and so people get to hear about the original Scanners, the Cronenberg film, the two sequels that came after that, and then the two Scanner Cop sequels. And then for good measure, I watched the Scanner Darkly again, but apparently that has nothing to do with the Cronenberg series. So what you going to do?
I think that the reason why you had to watch all those was revenge from Mr. Josh Hadley. We had him on the Howling episode, and you guys collectively watched all 37 versions of The Howling.
Yeah, and so this time it was Scanners, and I know Josh just sent out an email the other day where he wants people to volunteer for, like, what was it, like The Watchers and Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and, like, all of these film series that I didn't realize that there were multiple entries in. And I kind of stayed clear of that email.
Well, I raised my hand as a possible for the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. So we'll see if that goes through, depending on schedules.
Well, if you do, I'm very curious to hear that episode. I'm not going to be watching those movies in empathy for you. Exactly. All right. And that's where I can put the intro. All right, so yeah, be sure to check out all the good stuff over at our website, projection-booth.com. Thanks for downloading this special episode, listening to us yammer on for a little bit, and we will be back with our regularly scheduled program this Wednesday and the Wednesday thereafter and so on until they finally take our microphones away.
Let's go day by day for 30 a.m.